Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Do we not get the pleasure of seeing you, Tim?
Oh, hang on. Yeah. Let me sort that out. Can't deny.
You can't deny the...
Yeah.
We've got the bronze whaler there from Hawaii.
Oh, mate. That's the first thing we've got to talk about. Clint, what have you been doing, mate?
This is ridiculous.
It's like he's whitening his teeth as well. He's so brown.
That is the biggest tomato head I've ever seen.
As soon as you guys said it, that's amusing. But yeah, apparently.
Well, when we're on the circle court, how's the news that Hawaii ran out of sunscreen? And we didn't really get it.
I had actually been out in the sun all day and I was like pretty belted and I just got on there and started the thing and he's tearing into me and I'm like, what? Yeah.
That's a proper tan, mate. So welcome back, Triathlon Therapy. Speaking of therapy, someone that needs it more than most, Trav Shields is with us, multiple world champion. So Trav just ticked off the dirty double. He went and won the Olympic distance world championship in his age group, and then the next day decided to do a warm down and win the sprint distance world championship. A pretty incredible feat, especially given, you know, there's a lot of things that have gone on in the previous years, including a near triathlon career-ending injury. Before we start, Trav, I just want to say, just because you're a double world champion doesn't give you the right to text me at 6 a.m. to give me an update on how you're feeling.
Yeah, not, sorry about that.
I care about how you feel, but I don't care when I'm trying to feed my kids and get them ready for school. No, but Trav, massive congratulations. I guess let's get to the immediate side of it. Talk to me about the preparation, the sacrifice you made specifically for this this event, and then we'll talk a little bit about your history after that, because it's a long one. So,
yeah, hence the rude head. I was sort of half thinking about Taupo World Champs, I think, when they were announced. Then, you know, in typical age grouper fashion, we're building a house, and it was just like looking at the cost of getting over there. And I actually said to Jane, my wife, oh, I just wish there was a short course World Champs, which, because I enjoy those in Australia. And I'm not joking, the next day they announced the world champs. That was back in April 24, I think, was the first qualifier. So it's been on the radar quite a long time. And I think, you know, I've been on that program, the RPG program, not the program, not the LAMP program, for quite a long time. But I think it's sort of been, you know, I've been ticking along. I enjoy my racing, or been doing a long time. But I think we sort of had a plan to buckle down for Worlds, and we talked about that. And I think, yeah, just had that sort of bit of focus from, I guess it was from sort of May this year, and sort of looked at where my weaknesses were and talked about those. And that was sort of the focus, was to work on those weaknesses, but not sort of lose too much in sort of where my saw our strength. My strength.
And obviously, your biggest weakness is your love of beer. So
yes,
talk to me about that process.
yeah. So you all know I love a beer, most of my racing I was generally still had a few drinks and kept a bit of balance in life. But I knew that if I really want to do well in Worlds, I'd have to get off it, which was, you know, I was acting like I was doing some sort of massive life achievement. And I thought about it when I was thinking, what a first world problem, getting off beer. That's actually not that hard. But it actually made a massive difference, and I couldn't believe it in the sleep, and just training was so much easier. And yeah, so I think it made a massive difference. And I sort of, that was sort of a couple of months out. I joined the RPG training camp. I think that was sort of the kickoff back in sort of early August, I think, or in August. And
All a blur to me, Trev. Don't ask me details.
So yeah, and that was so that was one of the key things. And the other thing was, I think I work in a obviously I've got a pretty busy corporate job, so it's tough to sort of do a heap of volume. But I've sort of recognized over the last sort of 12 months, sort of fall apart a bit in the back end of races. So that was part of the plan as well, to sort of increase that endurance, and also be able to back up for the next day on that sprint.
Trav, how many hours were you getting through a week through that final prep?
Well, funnily enough, I looked at it and I was a bit disappointed because I thought it was a lot more. I don't know if it was obviously including tapers and stuff, but it was sort of 12, 13 hours a week. I was actually hoping for a bit more, but there was a couple of big weeks in there when I did that training camp. And, you know, I'm sure I remember a couple of 15-hour weeks, which for me is pretty big with everything else going on in life.
How many
It's
did you
that.
bank in the RPG camp up at Lennox?
22.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and
It's
he
quite.
was that wasn't even a full week, right? Because you had a day, I think you left a day early. Or it might have been 6 days. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was the 5 days, mate. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
So,
yeah. So
yeah, that was good. And that was awesome actually having, you know, people like Regan and Penny, and some of those, you know, high level age groupers like Tyler, chasing them in the pool and all that sort of thing. Because that was another weakness, other than the back end of races, was I just had this thing about the swim where I knew if I just wanted to be able to be comfortable in the swim.
so can you go into that a bit more, Trav? Like you said at the start there that you realized there were some weaknesses and things you had to work on to be better. Clearly it worked. What were said weaknesses? And obviously Reid might be able to chime in a little bit here. What were the weaknesses and how'd you go about trying to fix those or strengthen them?
So we've talked about beer. I won't touch on that, but let's talk about the race course. I think the for me, the swim and Reid seemed a bit less worried about the swim, but I was always worried about the swim. And the back end of races, where I'd kind of fall apart, in sort of even the back of a 10K, and sort of recognize that that's something I need to work on. So we came up with what I think it's the Reid termed the Nicola Spirig plan, back when she did the Olympics. And I think I can't remember which one it was, but she did the half, like just out from the Olympics,
2 weeks out, I think, was at
2 weeks
least.
out.
Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I do remember everyone thinking it was crazy at the time until she won.
Yes. So I was really focusing on that. And then on the swim, I just upped the swimming and try to focus more on technique and all those sorts of things, because that was sort of just in the back of my mind. And definitely didn't necessarily up the volume much, but I was trying to get in the pool pretty much at least sort of 5 times a week. And in the middle, I remember Apo talking about this, like just get in the pool and get the feel of the water, which, you know, I definitely. Let's face it, I'm not a swimmer, right? I just get those arms going and try and keep up. So that was the two key things I think we focused on.
Yeah, it was interesting even seeing Trav swim. Like, he is very responsive to feedback, but I think it's hard. A lot of athletes go to squads and master squads, but I think sometimes even the master squads are scared of ruining the athlete experience and pointing out something obvious. And, you know, we just did one small change to Trav's stroke and it was so much better. But I think, yeah, the frequency was the big thing for Trav. And as you talked about, Trav's always had natural speed. You know, he could throw him into any 1 hour event and he was always great, but he fades quickly, you know. As Jane always says, his endurance isn't his strong point. And so And so he, so yeah, we just decided, look, if we, I said to Trav, I think if you do a 70.3 and train up for that, you're still going to fade a bit because it's not your absolute forte, even though he still won his age group by, I don't know, 7 minutes. But I think it's going to really help your Olympic distance. And even just mentally, right, Trav, did it, it just, the 2 hour format just feels really short.
Yeah, mate. And I think I've talked to you that almost sport-ending injury where I broke my femur, I just, it gave me confidence in the run again. The run was my strength when I was younger because I have been doing this sport for a very long time. I think they're riding penny farthings when I started. But it just, I was pretty confident in my run. If I knew if I came off the bike, having that sort of endurance, even though I did fall apart a bit in Western Sydney at the back end, I was pretty pretty confident leading in, which was, I think, half the battle.
And Liz, when, you know, we always talk about, you know, this training block did this, or like we changed something in the swim, but as you know, nothing compares to just time in the sport and building that engine. Just interested, who started triathlon first? Like, who went longer out of the two? I think Trav would have now been in the sport pretty much longer than anyone, given he's still racing. When did you start, Liz?
Oh, I did my first triathlon at age 13, and I raced till I was 38. So, beat that, Trav. How many years have you done it?
Oh God!
So I did 25 years of triathlon.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I dipped in and out, right? Like I went overseas and did all that sort of stuff. So it wasn't as, and I'm sure in terms of hours and races, Liz is way above me. But I did my first when I was 13 as well, the BP Junior. So that was 1993.
There you go. So you're a 1980s kid.
I am.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And still going today. I'm pretty doing more now.
But what you just said there, Trav, like it's when you dip in and out of the sport, I think that does lend itself to longevity. You know, if you're just showing up every single, you know, you do a race, have a very short break and go again and go again and go again, eventually that does catch up with you, whether it's a dodgy heart read or mental burnout from it. So having that time to just go away and probably get fat and drink heaps while you're overseas and then come back to it. It does long-term help you stay in the sport, right?
Is that why you've dipped out, Clint, for a while? It's been 4 years now.
I'm quite... mate, this isn't just picking on me, all right? Trav, dipping in and out, do you think it's helped you stay in the sport long-term?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And sometimes it's been... where it was an option to dip out. But what I love about triathlon is I go to single sports sometimes, not the swim, let's be honest. But, I, you know, over the years I've done sort of bike racing and running. And the other big thing I think to stay in the sport is short course. I love short course and racing. And I think I marvel at people that can do Ironmans and for years on end. Like I couldn't fathom it with everything else going on in life. I mean,
but honestly, Trav, I don't think that many people do it longer term with a family, yeah, which is why I always try and encourage guys after an Ironman. I'm like, take 6 months, 12 months, race short course, come back to Ironman a year later, because it actually keeps them in the sport longer, right, Clint?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is like, it's incredibly unhealthy, in my opinion. If you're like working full time, got a family, and trying to do more than one Ironman a year, I just can't see how people can do it without sacrificing something along the way. So, like the short course, Reid and I mean, we all do try and push people to, if they want to do the sport long term, that's a good option. Because, as you said, Trav, like you were, what, 15 hours a week, if that, but you got a very good performance out of it. Whereas when you're doing an Ironman, you're probably getting up towards that over Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's just, it's not sustainable long-term.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's just not, it just couldn't happen on a weekend, right? With three kids and, you know, I'm soccer dad in winter and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, in saying that, the program, there was no fluff, right? I'm not fluffing around and, you know, doing a lot of zone one sort of stuff. It's all pretty specific, and I found it really good. And probably the other thing that was mandatory with Mr. Reed, given my advancing age, was the strength stuff. And I think that's been a game changer for me. I mean, since the injury, but where he actually, Reed made, I think I quote, "You look like you're the Hunchback of Notre Dame when you're running." to getting back to where I was, especially after the doctor told me I'm not going to run properly again.
Just on that one, Trav.
You were there.
When we went to
Less
Bright.
Less tan, but there.
Yeah. When we went to Bright and you kind of floated the idea of Reed coaching you again, we went running, and I think Reed and I were behind you snickering because you looked like you were running on legs that were about 5 inches difference in height. Can you just quickly run people through what the injury was and how you got back to, I mean, both of you, Reed and Trav, how you made progression to get back to where you are now?
Yeah, so at that time I was doing bike racing, and I was just coming into COVID, and we were actually one of the first, I don't know if you remember when they were naming locations and getting, and you got isolated because you were in that location. Like Jane and I had a date night at Ripple's restaurant and some idiot was coughing next to us. So we got put in a lockdown. But so I got put in a lockdown for a week, but it was like state champs cycling or something. And it was raining that day and Jane said, "Don't go out." And I did not listen. And this was like the day before her 40th birthday, by the way, and there's a big party planned. So needless to say, I went out and I just love to race, right? And I was racing myself and being more of an idiot than I would when I was riding with other people. And I binned it down Galston Gorge going way too fast and fractured my femur. It was a really serious injury. Took a long time to even feel like I was walking properly. And I was looking at anyone that was a sportsman that had come back from this. And there was a cyclist, I can't remember the name, they were pro. And we actually exchanged a few messages, but I couldn't find any runners. And I was like, shit. It was a bit of a long process. And then slowly, after being told I was the Hunchback of Notre Dame, went back to running. But it was really that focus program. So to give it an idea, when Reed gives me prioritization, which I need on my sessions with everything else going on in life, like bike and run would be priority two and strength was priority one, right? I had to do that. And that was mandatory, and I feel so much better and more balanced because of it.
Yeah. And the other thing too with strength, it's not just about injury prevention and, activating for the, to have good biomechanical balance in the body. It's so much as we get older about boosting your sex hormones as well, so giving that, I think there's a 16% increase in circulating testosterone if you do a really good strength set. Not sure what it is for women because we don't do sports science studies on women. it's not a joke. It's paying out, not paying out the industry. I'm sure that's out there, but I don't know the data, sorry. But I just know for men it does have a big factor, and it would for women too. So that's a big thing for anyone out there who's listening, who's getting older, who thinks, I don't need strength training, is it's not just about keeping muscle. It's as much about helping your hormonal health, because we know that a lot of aerobic endurance training can whittle down a lot of your hormones that make you feel good, that keep you healthy. So it's a nice counterbalance to that. Trav, what are you going to do now? So have a break. Was it a big come down after the race? I always say sometimes the worst come down that you can have from racing is when you actually achieve your goals.
Yeah, I think, and this is the first time in, I think, the whole racing career that I've actually exceeded expectations. Like I didn't actually have as a goal I was going to win both, right? I would love to have got a podium. So I've actually gone above it, which is a very surreal experience over the last week. And it's a bit of a, and I think I need a break mentally. For the first time ever, I don't really get that nervous before races. And Reed and I have talked about that before, but to be honest, before that Olympic distance, I was so nervous. So, you know, I mean, I know Reedy's talked about having sort of, you know, anxiousness before when he was pro and all that sort of thing. And I just don't know how he did it because I actually felt a bit ill. And we had a chat beforehand, and I know you calmed me down a bit. And I think since then, yeah, it's kind of, I haven't even thought about what's next. I think I need a break. Like, I feel fine physically. It's just mentally, it's been
Right now,
a massive build.
hopefully right now you're still within a week, Trav. You're still in like basking in that glory, right? You haven't come down yet, so that's what's coming.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's been so good. Like, obviously, I had such good support and the family and friends that kind of know the story, and you know, everyone at work, they're all very excited. So it's been, yeah, it's been great. But yeah, definitely need a bit of a break from that really structured sort of training.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the family will like the fact that you don't have to rush off to all different sessions on the weekend. Trav, it's been awesome to have you on and also a pleasure to coach you. Sorry, just really quickly on that nervousness thing. When you told me you were nervous, I was like, we're on here, you know, because I think a lot of athletes, they fight the nervousness. They hate it. And I did until I worked with a psychologist to really learn to embrace it or lean into it and be like, okay, I'm feeling like this because my body is getting ready to go deeper than it's gone before. And you know, you're always such a relaxed customer. I was like, you know, you were snoring within 2 minutes when we stayed in the same room at Western Sydney. I'm like, how does he do that? I can't remember sleeping more than an hour before a race, you know, like. And then and when you said you're nervous, I was like, yes, that means he's actually going to have adrenaline for once.
The old dog.
The old dog. And yeah, and then when you won, when you did the Olympic distance so comfortably, I knew the sprint distance was in the bag too, even though you might not have.
Confidence read. I just need
Yeah.
some closure on the broken leg story, Trav. So I just need to know from your wife's perspective, how did the party go? And
It was
Let's not
awesome.
talk
Trav
about it,
wasn't
Liz.
there.
Let's not talk about it. Yeah, that didn't go so well.
Oh, sorry to hear.
I've tried to make up for it, but I don't think I'll ever get there.
Was it fully cancelled or just without you?
No, it was we did a combined one after that, I think.
Oh, that's as good as fully cancelled, Trav. You've got
Yeah.
10. You got 10 years to plan the best 50th you can come up with, and if you
There's a,
don't go
exactly.
riding the day before, Trav, for God's sake.
Mate, definitely not. Oh, and it's definitely a rule now. I just don't go out when it's wet. It's the rule. So I'm definitely been doing a lot on the kicker, which is a massive game changer as an older person in the sport. Mate, so much more time efficient with training, hey?
Yeah.
For sure.
And then I do remember your 30th, actually, Trav, and I should say this. I was pretty crap at triathlon. And Trav was the first person that said to me, "You're gonna be really good. You're gonna make it. You're gonna be a world champion." And it was purely because I didn't drink at that time in my life.
Yeah, Reedy was standing there as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, and we're having a serious conversation while I'm dressed as Tina Turner. It was a tea theme. But yeah,
He was
Reedy's been
actually
coaching.
dressed as a Ninja Turtle, not a metaphor.
Yeah, he was literally dressed as a Ninja Turtle. But yeah, Reedy's been coaching me before he became the big dog in the sport of, you know, that very exciting 2016 race. And since 2012, right? So it's been a long time we've been working together. And yeah, so it's been great,
Which is, I
Reedy.
think, such it's such a good when you have coached someone for that long, it's sort of easy in many ways because you know their personality, you know their body type, you know what they respond to, and it's like, you know, you can really take a risk with a prep. Like if I didn't know as much about you, we wouldn't have trained for this race like we did. There's no
No.
chance. And so, you know, that as much as I think sometimes it is good for athletes to mix it up, you know, every maybe if, after a few years with a coach and try and learn something else, I also think athletes sometimes mix it up when everything's working, you know, improvements are steady. And I know I sometimes would just be like, you know, I'd almost get anxious. Oh, I need to learn something new, or, you know, but, and then, you know, I think for sure when you plateau, it's good. But once, if things are just heading in the right direction, sometimes people need to stick it out. And even if it's a little dip or a bit of a drop, you know, you've got to give your coach time to really problem solve and work it all out. Trav, we better let you go. I know you seem absolutely flat out there. So,
mate,
working from home Fridays.
Block the diary. Block the diary for the big dogs. Not you, Liz, obviously.
Big dogs.
Thanks, Trav.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
No worries.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
Just
people keep messaging me, but I can't. Oh, I got locked out. Hang on.
We're going to just keep chatting through till when the gals join us.
Yeah.
Liz, just going back to what they were saying, like Reed was saying, and also Trav about being nervous and then like learning to manage that over the racing. How were you throughout your career, and did you get better, worse, or towards the end were you one of those people who were kind of like, I don't, you know, I'm not nervous anymore, so the fire's not there? How'd you go about that?
No, I always got nervous, and yeah, absolutely did. But I think early on I realized that those nerves equated to the fact that I cared, the fact that I was, you know, I was all in on this, I was invested, and it genuinely mattered to me. And I would say up until my last race, I had those same feelings. So I think that was good. You know, I was still present enough and wanting it enough that I was nervous. There were smaller races where I didn't get those nerves, and that was understandable. But all the big races like Kona and my Ironmans, I always got nervous. And I do think in part, I saw a quote the other day, and it was, if you're not nervous, it's like you basically don't know what you've signed up for. And anyone that's gone deep in races knows how much it can really hurt. And just watching the world champs recently, how sideways things can go. So the nerves are partly in there for the physical, but yeah, in part it's there because you've invested so much and you want it to go the way that you feel it's deserved. So I did find really good coping techniques. I worked with a sports psych at one point in my career, and those techniques that I used, I carried with me for my whole career, and I actually passed them on to my athletes when, you know, most people are dealing with nerves, let's be honest. And if you're not, you either don't know what you're up for or you're some sort of narcissist. So it is so part of the normal process, and it's just about harnessing them for the better and, yeah, working with them.
I'd love to ask Glenn how you were in the days. It was funny in Hawaii, like having all the girls around before the race, you could feel the energy change as they got closer to the race. And it's a good thing, right? Like people, you can see that they're starting to think about what they're doing and embracing it. But they all, like Penny and Regan specifically, thought that they were being the biggest grumps and like being really hard to be around. And I was like, this is way better. Sorry, Appo, but it was way better than being around Appo.
You know? those girls were so cool. They were great to be around. I think the only thing is like, you know, the normal jokes that you crack where normally like everyone pitches in, everyone's laughing, you might just get a little chuckle and you're like, oh yeah, okay, they're nervous, so my jokes aren't really going down too well.
I'm used to that, to my jokes. That's the standard.
No,
hey, Jess, how are you?
Hey, good, how are you?
Speaking of energy, I just thought I'd try and use one of Clint's connecting lines.
What do you got? What do you got?
Jazz, it's stoked to have you on. Coached by Liz. Amazing result at the Kona Ironman World Championships in your age group. Liz, do you want to introduce – you can introduce Jazz. Maybe give us a bit of a time – frame on when you guys started and what the journey's been like from a coaching perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say our coaching relationship still early years. What you referred to earlier, Reedy, is there's definitely a lot of learning process that happens between coach and athlete. So Jazz and I started working together last August. So what's that, like 14, 15 months ago now? And at that point, when I started with Jazz, she was doing Busselton Ironman, but she also came to me with a grand plan of heading to do a big trek in Nepal for 12 days. I think it was 3 weeks out from that Ironman, and I was like, all right, we can do this. And to Jazz's credit, she's what I call one of those unicorn athletes. You ask and she does. So pretty much every session I asked of Jazz last year into that prep, in Busso she did, and then went off and did this amazing trek. And I think she actually came back fitter and stronger in some ways. What would you say to that, Jazz?
Oh, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I was a bit nervous, to be honest, about going to Everest Base Camp before Basso. I think I was super oblivious anyway because I didn't really know what I was getting my time. Like, as Basso was my first Ironman last December, I absolutely loved it. And in hindsight, I kind of can't believe, like, the year I had and just how seamless it was. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that potentially put both Jazz and I into a little bit of a false sense of security in that she handled the trek, sort of thrown her into Ironman training, went to Basso, won her age group. It was all this really dream run, qualified for Kona and took her spot. And we were like, cool, let's, you know, put 2025 all eggs in the Kona basket. And the kind of amount of interruptions that unfolded this year was pretty nuts, if I'm honest. It just kept being one thing after another, and as each new thing came, I just was like, all right, surely this is the last. But Jazz, pipe in here, but I feel like we started the year, she had a little not little she had a quad strain to start that took her out for a while.
Yeah.
Recovered from that, hit by a car, broke the scap, so in a cast for a good, oh gosh, what was that, 6 to 8 weeks?
Yeah.
What was next after that, Jazz?
Next after that was the stress reaction.
Sacral.
Then my ribs / my pec. Still don't really know what was going on there. Now a stress fracture. But yeah, it's been a year.
Yeah.
So the fracture was during the race, you had a reaction going in and then it's fractured now, or?
Well, the reaction was like good because that was a good couple months out of Kona. But obviously something was still, yeah, I kind of felt a little bit of something the week before Kona, and then in the race, in the run, I definitely knew.
Yeah. It was one of those tough ones. Like, we knew there was something up. I think 13 days out, she first felt the pain, and we sort of had that hard conversation that there's, you know, a strong chance that this is bone, sort of given the history of that year. And if you do run, there's a strong chance you're going to come out of this race with a fracture and not be able to run for quite an extended period. And, well, as it turns out, Jazz is on crutches now. So we had that hard conversation, and I think before I'd even finished asking Jazz the question if she was prepared to do that, she was nodding her head saying, yeah, I'm here for it. there you go. In my defense, I put, you know, I gave her the.
Yeah. That's it.
Kona glory lasts forever. Crutches are temporary.
It's also one of those situations, right, where like you can – I don't think I've ever had someone go, yeah, you know what, I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna go and try. It's like, it's the, if you went there and 10K into the run, it was unbearable and you couldn't. I had a similar thing 2 years ago with one of the girls, and it was like, if you got there and 10K into the run, had to pull out, at least you went, you know what, I tried. And that,
exactly.
Yeah, as opposed to being sitting at home going, what if, maybe I could have. So,
yeah.
I mean, it turns out it went pretty bloody well, right, Jazz?
Yeah, it went to plan as much as it could, which is positive.
So, Jazz, can you talk just a little bit about your background in sport in general? I'm just curious, like, obviously you've got to a high level very quickly, and curious what the background was to help, you know, with that, or whether it's just sheer natural talent.
So when I was younger, I grew up doing surf life saving just around Lennox. So I did that until I was like 14. And then I stopped doing that. So I did that since I was like 5 to around 14. And then I went more into like footy. I was playing like rugby sevens and touch footy and stuff like that. Then stopped that and did purely gym stuff from like 16 to then when I started training for triathlon last February. So always been active and like super determined and always like had a goal in that sense. But yeah, I kind of didn't really do anything endurance at all, to be honest.
And when you played footy, did you get a lot of injuries doing that, or is it?
No, I've never had injuries.
Yeah, and I think the context.
Go on.
The context to like Jazz saying that, yes, like before I'd even finished asking her the question whether she wanted to race, was that potentially, like a lot of the injuries she had this year, and there was one other thing, she had influenza B about 6 weeks before Kona as well, which kind of kept her in bed for about 8 days. So there was just all this stuff. And I think each time throughout the year, there'd been a few where that were really nearly, she basically didn't race for most of the year. Well, didn't race, did you, Daz? Because of all these injuries. And there was a few times where we did have to question if Kona was like the right choice. So when this final thing popped up 14 days out or 13 days out, I think for Jazz it was a no-brainer. I also don't think we've mentioned here like the context. Jazz ended up coming third in her age group in Kona. Which is absolutely incredible.
How did you manage the training around the injuries, Liz? Was there like, if you couldn't run, was there other things you did? Like, would you do more strength or aqua running or? Yeah,
we got very creative, didn't we, Jazz? It wasn't it wasn't just running that she wasn't able to do. Like with the broken scap and then the sort of pec strain, there was a lot of not swimming, but we did a lot of like just kicking in the pool with a snorkel and basically kept her in the water and sort of kept that for the injuries that were upper body. And then the lower body injuries, we did some all sorts of things, didn't we, Jazz? Like we got you on the elliptical, Alter-G, and then even just all of her return to run, I like really encouraged Jazz to get off like hard surfaces and just really changed things up. Intensity wise, ripped a lot of intensity out. There was just a lot of adapting all year in many different directions, if I'm honest.
That leans into what our sort of philosophy is, right, with injuries. It's one day to, I'll leave you to explain it.
In terms of, I mean, Liz has done a pretty good job, right? Like a very good job in terms of you got to get creative throughout the whole the process of getting back and intensity out as much as possible. And pretty much what you've said, Liz, is how we try and make sure people get back as safely as possible. Jazz,
but it also comes down to the athlete attitude in that, you know, when you get these athletes just stuck in this victim mindset, and I always say after a couple of days, I'm like, righto, it's time to switch from victim to what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Everything's an opportunity. Okay, I can't swim. Let's focus more on biking and building up other areas. I can't run. Let's turn you into, let's bring your bike up another level. You know, it's just, it is very natural to feel sorry for yourself, but it also doesn't help if you get stuck in that mindset. Sorry, Clint, what are you saying?
Jazz, from when you got to the island and through race day, how'd you find the whole experience?
I absolutely loved it. Like, I was in my element. I thought it was so surreal. The first ride I did out on the Queen K, I was just like, wow, like, I can't believe I'm here. It was awesome. Really good vibe too.
I think that day you might have taken a piece of Liz's soul and left it out on the Queen K, and that's it was good to see.
Liz, you did what I did a few years ago. Thought I could still ride the course, and mate, I was in pieces.
just on that, I was so impressed how many days Liz lasted until she fell to pieces. Reed, it was like she kept showing up for sessions. I was also
surprised. I didn't think I'd last as long as I did. Actually, the day before the race, not many people know this, but I swam early with you, Jazz, and then I went to swim with another athlete later, and I got a few strokes in, and all of a sudden I couldn't lift my left arm, and I was like, I found my limit.
Coach life. Race day, Jazz, talk us through how it went for you.
It went really well. The only time where I was like, oh, this is quite tough, was in the run. Like the run was definitely the hardest part for me. But the swim went better than I thought. I didn't really know what to expect, because obviously there were so many hurdles in the past year. But even considering the amount of hurdles, there was still a heap of progress made from my first year. So I was confident that I kind of wanted to make sure I was giving it my all, because when I did Busto in December, I kind of just like I didn't cruise through, that's the wrong word to say, but it wasn't, I didn't finish and thought, yeah, I gave that my everything. So that was my main goal with Kona. But obviously it's such a different course and the heat and all things. So I was just sticking to the plan that Liz gave me, which went super smooth. Soon went better than I thought, considering my ribs and stuff before it. I love the bike. That was my favorite part of the day. I just absolutely loved it. And I think that's because I've been biking so much this year, because that's the majority of what I could do for consistently for the year. So that was really good. Then the run was pretty brutal from like 25K just with the pain. But yeah, I just loved it. It was super surreal.
Nice. One question I always like to like, if you could give advice to someone next year about that race, because everyone always like asks, why is it so difficult, or what's something you learn along the way from this year that you'd either pass on if you could have to yourself before the race, or to someone going next year about that place specifically?
I think just like the cooling strategies really help probably more than people think. I definitely had Liz in my ear reminding myself to like grab the bottles, especially like on the bike, to like wet myself. 'Cause there was many times where I was like, I could so just go through and I'm in a flow. But I think I really tried to like stick to the plan, which obviously paid off. 'Cause like, yes, I was hot, but also like I just really was nailing into myself. The cooling side of things was, and the hydration, that side of things is so important.
Yeah, and watching what happened in the women's pro race, and
Yeah.
that, yeah, it gets the best of people, that race, and all those little micro differences, like every opportunity to cool in that race is like compounded and really important. So if you miss even a few opportunities, it can be the tipping point at some point
Yeah.
later on. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, what are you thinking? What's the plan going forward, Jazz? What's the big goal now that you've already on the podium at World Champs? New sport, or are you staying with triathlon?
Nah, I'm staying in triathlon. I love it. I really love it. I'm keen to have a good year next year, but I'll just really work on obviously this injury and resting for a bit, and then yeah, we'll have a good year hopefully.
Nice.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. I'm keen, like as I mentioned earlier, like Jazz and I are sort of like learning our groove and kind of where Jazz's limits are. Working on the bone health stuff and being, hyper aware of what's going on there. So,
Yeah.
yeah, and
It's
that's.
also hard. I think sometimes when you get athletes like Jazz, I used to talk about this a lot, but I used to give a couple of sessions I'd do off RPE and just let the athlete just do it off feel, and how wildly different the RPE was for where their actual physiological parameters were was crazy. So I had one athlete who's very elite, and I'm like, I just want you to do an easy run. So he went out and he ran 6-minute Ks. I'm like, cool, that's easy, good work. And then I have an age grouper who's nowhere near his level. And I'm like, I just want you to go out, run easy. We'll just see what the data comes back. 4:15 pace. And you're like, it's athletes that really love to just have that slight suffering all the time. It's really hard sometimes. Like I got injured a lot because I was exactly like that, even though my coach was like, slow down, do this, do that. I'm not saying you're like that, Jazz, but it just seems like probably your motivation level, and
Yeah.
maybe you sometimes push through some of the warning signs.
Yeah. Yeah, for
Also,
sure.
the longer you stay, as Liz said, the longer you stay, like the better you learn. You both learn each other, right? Jazz, you learn how Liz works. Liz learns you as an athlete. So, just hang around, okay?
As long as you keep doing well.
Yeah.
Gosh, gosh.
No, I'm joking.
I'm
Well,
sorry.
that's pretty much a wrap, Jazz, unless you guys have any more questions.
No, that's about it. It was just good to hear that you enjoyed the whole, even with the injury. It's great to hear that like
Yeah.
you got through to hear that you got through mid-20s of that run over there before it started to not be that enjoyable. That's a pretty bloody good day in Hawaii. So
Yeah, I'm
really good
definitely
to hear.
pretty grateful.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jazz. You're welcome to stay on. I'm going to just chat to Liz and Clint a tiny bit more, or you're welcome to, and feel free to throw in any questions. I was just interested mainly, Liz, what your thoughts were on the pro race. I know even if you missed large parts of it, Glenn would have watched every second, so he's hopefully filled you in.
As we saw, it was pretty unprecedented what happened with Lucy and Taylor. and you know, you sort of try and break down the whys of it. And ultimately, I thought about why, like Lucy's so experienced, and you know, why did that happen? And both of those two women all day were in close proximity to one another, pushing all day. And as I just mentioned earlier, when Jazz mentioned cooling strategies, it's all it takes is a couple of those small moments where you don't quite get what you typically might if you'd been racing on your own. And you know, potentially that's what happened with those two women, plus that not being able to step off the pedal at any point. You know, they were always within 1 to 2 minutes of one another. And both obviously wanted that win so badly. And yeah, unfortunately, saw the unraveling of both of them, just kind of devastating way to finish, especially Taylor getting so close.
Oh, yeah.
Solveig potentially raced, you know, she was minutes down the road and had a bit more of her own autonomy over her race, less racing per se, and yeah, managed to keep it together. And then Kat running through. I want to ask you this question, Clint. Like, I've heard people say it was a super hot Kona, but then we've seen Kat go and run the run course record. I mean, I feel like it always feels hot there. It does vary a little, but you know, do we see a run course record when it's super hot? What do you think, Clint?
I think, well, I've been the last 4 years, and that's the warmest the first hour of the run's been. But I feel like the rest of the day was pretty typical. Like, in terms of the ride, was the typically, the winds were very typical of what you should expect. And I talked to Mark, Kat's husband, after the race, and he said that she rode not near the numbers she thought she would ride and felt terrible on the bike. But then got so maybe the reason she did run so well is because she was 20 watts under or whatever she thought she could ride. Therefore, she didn't expel so much energy on the bike. And she was in that group where she wasn't pushed to the limit the whole way through the ride. But in terms of weather-wise, like, it was definitely warmer the first hour of the run comparatively to the last few years, but nothing out of the ordinary. Like, I wasn't amazed by it. But I do think that exactly what you said, Liz, where it was warmer the first part of the run, and I feel like those guys got the two ladies got caught up maybe just thinking about each other a tiny bit. It's only got to take that tiny bit when it's really warm through that first hour along Elihu Drive to then,
Get that core temp up
yeah,
and
like an hour and a half later is when they start to go, oh, so and so yeah, it was Kat's run was amazing, but yeah, I do kind of think, we always look at patterns, and maybe that was the reason that she could still execute a very good run because she wasn't right on her limit the whole ride.
I also think too, we do see this small advancement in shoe tech every year. And I think even with the super shoes we had 5 years ago, I think the super shoes now that are available, there's more that are suited to the Ironman sort of running. So potentially too, like, Kat's incredible on the run. And I think if you've really got to look at, okay, what are the top 10 run times to judge whether it's hotter than usual or not hotter than usual, because then you'll really see, you can't have one outlier, won't be a prediction of how hot it is. So, but yeah, it's interesting that, because you said there was a bit of rain early, right,
Yeah,
Liz? And then that humidity would have just hit hard
we were
later.
walking down the morning. Like, I parked the car and then walked down, and I was walking next to someone, and she was like, "Oh, it's raining. This is so good." And I kind of giggled to myself and thought, "This is not good. This is gonna make your day." And there wasn't that, like, there's not normally that much wind along Elihu Drive, but it was just very humid, very, very humid because of the rain. So, but yeah, I think also what you said, Reid, top 10 runs, and also the amount of people who seem to like the DNF rate of the pros, that I think that's sometimes can be a good guide on how tough the day was. And there was a fair few more than the previous years from the numbers I saw. So.
I'm interested, Liz. I'll just share a quick story. The only time I've ever really put myself into a massive hole in the heat was a close battle in the Philippines, where side by side with someone, hit the finish chute. I literally ran into the barrier and crossed to walk and crawled across the finish line, like absolute mess. And it was definitely because I had that person next to me. I had Burks next to me, just right, like proper racing each other.
Yeah.
Have you had any experiences where you've like really turned yourself inside out in the heat, or overcooked, or just yeah, brain's gone?
Yeah, I had a few, and again, one was in a battle with Caroline Stefan in Vietnam. You know the race. So yeah, there's a few of these races in Asia that actually, bizarrely and crazily enough, that make Kona feel cool. So Philippines and Vietnam are two of the ones that yeah, you just actually wish for Kona conditions. But and yeah, that was a close battle racing Caroline. You know, never more than a minute apart all day. And yeah, but to be honest, like anything shorter than Ironman, you in the pro race, you generally are racing pretty tight. So yeah, had that one where I don't remember the last 4K of the run, but did manage to finish. Early on in my career, I had.
Oh, sorry, just on a podcast. Sorry, one second.
I'm just gonna mute myself. Sorry, guys. You keep going.
No, you're right. Oh, good work
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, good muting, Reid. We'll let him go. Yeah, so they
see how it go.
Yeah, the races where you have you get caught racing is the ones that you stop following the process, right, Liz?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, you know, like in training, if you stick to sort of relatively conservative numbers, you can get a lot longer out of yourself than if you're spiking power or, you know, spiking heart rate and that sort of thing. So, and that's what racing does. And to be honest, that's what makes racing interesting as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But there is a lot to be said to racing your own race.
Yeah. Just back to what Jazz said earlier about having your voice in her ear saying, follow that process through the aid stations. Like that's absolutely music to my ears to hear that she, that when they got to, and we spoke about it before the race over there, Liz, where they need to follow that process of getting hydration back on the bike, being ready. Because if you miss, like that last aid station, I think it might be 15K from town or something, still on the bike over there. If you miss something small like that later in the day, it can just ruin your day, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it sounds pretty simple, but the aid stations can get crowded over there. You see it on the coverage all the time. People are hitting bottles, dropping them. And it's so easy to not get a bottle. And it can be that tipping point where you spend 30 minutes not being able to drink and it catches up with you later. But just being preemptive, I think I said to Jazz, I was like, even if you don't, like, if you got a full bottle still on your bike, I want you to refill at every aid station in the case that you potentially miss one later on.
Yeah.
So,
it's very much like, you know, a lot of people, and to be fair, most of the time it's males who say, oh, I don't want to carry that extra weight or whatever on the bike. It's like, look, just put two extra, like have two bottles behind your saddle. And if there's two on there, it's not the end of the world. If you come up to an aid station, grab the full one, spray yourself with it, and then replace it and then keep going, which is probably anyone who's on their way to Malaysia this week, next weekend. That's one of those races where you really need to be very on the ball with following the process to make sure that you don't miss any of the aid stations.
I had one experience racing in the Philippines, and you know, there's aid stations and there's aid stations, and I was in this Ironman race and wasn't getting what I needed at the aid stations, was leading the race and had a bit of a gap and decided that I actually needed to stop, unclip at this aid station and fill my own bottles because I wasn't getting what I needed. And I just kind of knew that this was going to be like a race of attrition. And the one reason I potentially wouldn't win or podium at this race was if I didn't get my fluid and nutrition in. So made that decision. And actually it was something that Taylor did as well in Kona. She stopped at that special needs up in Harvey and took her three bottles. And at the time I was like, I think I saw it on the coverage. I'm like, oh, what is she doing? She's letting Lucy get 60 seconds up the road. This seems madness at the front of the race. But, you know, at that point it was the right choice for her, like to have three more full bottles. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite enough, but damn, she got close.
I never understand that though. There's ways to be able to manage it, you know, with having one bottle of a concentrate of electrolytes or one bottle with calories, and then just grabbing more at aid stations while you're rolling. I'm never like, especially that spot, it's such a fast part of the course. I feel like you just lose so much time stopping at that special needs. And of course, if it had worked out, I'd be saying it's just a genius move.
No, I think that the difference there, Reid, is like, yeah, I agree. Like you can manage it on the bike, but Taylor's on her own anyway. She was right. She rode off the front of the, like she was solo the whole way up there. But like for someone, say like Regan, if she's on the in that group of seven and decides to stop and then has to grovel the whole way back to town on her own, that would be like that. I mean, there was one of the girls who was in their group dropped off at the Harvey turnaround and her day went south very quickly from there because she had to ride the whole way to town. So yeah, it's
Different scenarios,
yeah, for sure.
Well,
But look,
Frederick
even
Bentley, it always used to stop, and when he won, I think. So that was interesting to me when he stopped, but
and I saw footage of Taylor missing, a whole aid station of bottles. So look, whether she'd always planned to take the bottles at the special needs or it was a contingency. But look, even the leaders of the race aren't always getting everything they need from each aid station. So best laid plans, really, like you say, you should be able to carry everything and pick up what you need at aid stations, but that's not always how races work out. So
I think having the backup plan there for sure, but I also think it should be the backup plan.
Backup. Agree, agree, yeah.
Depending on where the special needs are, like sometimes it could be on an uphill section, or it depends on what level you're at, whether you're with a pack, like Clint said, there's so many factors.
One quick one that I've seen about the race is like that the aid stations on the run specifically weren't as like stocked as highly as they normally are with sponges and ice and stuff like that. That was for the people towards the front of the race. And then the chat is like, with 3,000 people ish going to be there next year with men and women, is there maybe a thought of, or do you think it would be too far against the tradition to possibly make a two-loop run?
Ooh, has this been
So
floated, has it?
yeah, I've seen a bit of chat forums, and I think for a spectacle like imagine obviously getting to see the prize halfway through the run. So like I looked at it yesterday just while I was going down a rabbit hole of try frothing. If you ran Alihi Drive up Palani and just out to the boat harbour or a little bit back and then came back to town and did that loop again, obviously you're dropping out the energy lab, but I mean, a few years from now it would be all forgotten and then find something else to talk about. But yeah, I just wonder, you guys having raced there at the very pointy end of the race, how you would feel about a two-loop run, which it wouldn't be as lonely.
I'm all for it. I think that it'd be great for the crowd because I think that race is actually a bit hard, like it's a bit disappointing as a spectator because you lose your runner for most of the race. And that first 15, 16K with the pros coming through, it's awesome on Alley Drive. And you just want to see those battles. And I think it'd be really good for the sport. It would be very busy, obviously, on the course, but I don't know.
Half
I think.
the aid stations, and probably they could drop the volunteer amount of people because they wouldn't have to have as many out on course. So logically, it'd probably work. But yeah, we'd be dropping the energy lab off. Liz, thoughts?
Logically, it makes a lot of sense. You're right, for the aid stations, for the spectator point of view. And even I think having age groupers and having the pros run past them, that's really exciting for them. So there's a lot of reasons it makes sense. I think from a course point of view, like Ali'i and Palani are probably some of the hardest parts of the course in terms of there's stuff will breeze. So you do get that kind of overheating, superheating happening. And so yeah, it could really change the dynamic of that run course. And also in the race, you get that quite lonely time out on the Queen K and in the energy lab where you can sort of stick to your own processes more and you don't have people yelling at you. So it would change it and make it. I mean, there's a lot of races, Frankfurt and a lot of the big Ironman races where you do have crowds screaming at you for a lot of the race. So it's not entirely something new, but yeah, it would be new for Kona. But yeah, it does make a lot of sense.
Or even if they did one lap but sent it the other way, where you could still be out on the course. the whole, because that you know, got all the way to what's the name of the Dolphin Beach, Captain Cook's sort of
Oh
area.
yeah, out towards Keyahoe or whatever. Well, originally, like for those people that haven't been there and watched the race, it's very boring. You know, they do 10 Ks in town on the bike, and then they're gone till the end of the ride. And then you see them at about where we were most of the time, like 2 Ks and then 10 Ks, and then you don't see them till the end unless you follow them on course, which you're not allowed to do. So like from a spectator point of view, it would be awesome. And I mean, this course has changed over the years. T2 used to be up the end at Keyahoe, and you only saw them once on the run. So it's not like unprecedented to change it, but it would be kind of, yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, they've already changed the way that things have happened a few times. So,
Yeah, the stuff that you're seeing, Clint, is it coming from Ironman or is it just people
nah,
speculating?
more so, I mean, you know what it's like, Liz. After every race, people there's whingers who don't get exactly what they want out of the race. You know, like they might have wanted 10 sponges and they got six or whatever. But it's you know, and then people start to talk about how they could be better. Yeah,
Better.
and I mean, also the fact that you know that everyone's coming back together now. You know, we were doing males, females, different places, and it would be the logical time to make the course better. Can't really change the ride because you'd be dropping off Harvey, and that's probably the place that we still need to go to make sure that the race gets broken up or there's something, because the highway is pretty, you know, if you did 2 laps on the ride, which I wouldn't be able to do with numbers, but on the run you can certainly do it. So yeah, it'd be the time to look at it.
Yeah, look, the last time I was in Kona in 22, that was when they had the women on the Thursday, the men on the Saturday. And I think a lot of the reason they moved away from that was their lack of volunteers for over the 2 days. And I do remember I had a male athlete racing, and the aid stations at that point were not manned, not stocked, and it was not okay. So it's, clearly something that I'm dealing with consistently over there is getting enough volunteers and enough help for that race. So yeah, obviously an issue that they're trying to resolve.
One final question, then we'll wrap. But Lucy's penalty for a bottle dropping out, is that okay or not okay? Like, were you, I can't remember where you stood on this. You were sort of like, oh yeah, I think she should get a penalty because I really like rules.
Liz, you go first because I'll get ranty on this one.
Well, the bottles they give out in Kona are really just prone to falling out. They're these soft bottles and they don't really fit in people's cages. So that is pretty unfair on the athletes. But I guess there does need to be some accountability to, securing your stuff on your bike. So I don't know. I'm in both courts. I did actually receive a littering penalty in Kona myself, and I think I either got 4 or 5 minutes back in my day. And that was a moment of like, I will never do that again. So to get it's 60 seconds now, is that right? That she got. I mean, relatively, she got off easy.
I think if they're going to use the bottles they're using, they need to let people know well in advance, and then it is on the athlete to like. You might have a refillable bottle between the arms, or you come up with a crafty way to make sure that they're securely fastened on the bike. But bigger, I think bigger issue with like I'm happy she got yeah, actually yeah I am. I'm happy she got it because the rules are rules, Tim. The rules are rules. No, but in terms of
Mate,
I
you
think
ever urinated on the bike, Clint?
never. Never.
Rules
I would never
are
do
rules. You
that.
shouldn't
No,
have.
but I do think that there was kind of, it did feel like there was rules for some athletes, the big fish, and rules for the smaller fish over the whole week. An example was like coaches were told not to be at briefings. Heaps of the bigger fishes, partners or coaches were at briefings. You know, and people might think, why do they need to be there? Well, when athletes are really nervous and they're not absorbing information, it's good for someone else to be there to have another ear to then say, hey, what about this? Or did you hear that? Or whatever. And there was also a lot of the athletes' partners or coaches riding almost the whole course next to them. I think rules are there for a reason. It's something that poor old one of the ladies who stayed with me works for Ironman, and I I hassled her all week about some of the things. I think that professional athletes should have to say who their coach is. Coaches should have to do like a kind of terms and conditions thing. And if they're doing those kind of things, then there's a strike system. And if you're doing the wrong thing as a coach, you should be, reprimanded. And if you don't start doing the right thing, then your athlete gets punished for your shitty decisions on the day. So,
Yeah, I do think whenever there's an unfair advantage gained, I agree. I think on a windy course with crap bottles, I don't think like mistakes happen. It's an you could accidentally like have gel on your hands, a bottle slips. It's like I think that's different. But yeah, I agree. I used to crack me when the big dogs used to have someone else bring their bike into transition and set it up, and I'd be like, this is not what it's about. It's supposed to be fair.
The just quickly on that one, like, and I can say it because she didn't finish, but Lucy's partner rode like a lot of the course with her. But could you imagine having a loved one leapfrogging you while you're out there just suffering like a dog out in the energy lab? Of course, like he ended up was the one who stopped her from racing. Like he just stopped because she was a bit wobbly. Like I said, Penny and Regan were talking about it after the race. And like what? Like you'd tell me to get stuffed in 5 seconds if I was anywhere past the end of Palani. Like you just want to go out there and do your own thing. So, I think that that it would be good if it was just a blanket rule across all, and they're not getting preferential treatment.
Yeah, fair
Well,
call. anything we need to announce coming up? I'm going up to Hyper Nathan Dortmund's studio on the next Tuesday for a bunch of sweat testing and fueling consults. If anyone's interested, email info@rpgcoaching.com. You can check out the membership for a free trial. Clint, anything coming up?
There's
Liz?
a lot coming up when you look at it. We've got what Melbourne, we've got a lot going to Malaysia, we've got Melbourne, we've got WA, and then soon enough it's going to be a big group going to New Zealand. So fair few inquiries. We always get inquiries after races because people see how well we do, with the results. So if anyone's looking for coaching, reach out. There is a plethora of awesome coaches working with us now. We will chat to you and steer you in the right direction to the right human to help you achieve your goals.
And Liz, do you want to give Corrupt Apparel a plug? We just got our cycling kits from Corrupt Vision, Glenn, and super stoked with them. Members who are listening, get in the shop because there's only a few in each size left.
Yeah, for sure. We're backwards and forwards with the producers, and yeah, I'm really, really happy with the product we've come up with. So yeah, a good crew did a pre-order and they've all receiving theirs, and we're getting lots of positive feedback. So yeah, there's a bit in the shop. It'll probably go pretty quick, but yeah, hopefully we restock and start to get all your crew in the RPG repping.
And if you are interested in sponsoring the podcast, particularly if you're an aloe vera company, we will take you. Product is all we need for poor Clint's tomato head. All right. Thanks, guys.
On that note,
I'll catch you later.
yeah.
See ya.